I'm Nadia Sirota, and from WQXR's Q2 Music, this is Meet the Composer. Today, we've been mining the brain of Andrew Norman. In 2013, Andrew wrote a piece for my sextet Y Music called Music in Circles. Y Music's instrumentation poses some pretty specific problems to composers. We have a string trio plus flute, clarinet, and trumpet. And for one thing, that's a whole bunch of treble instruments and not a ton of bass. And number two, mixing winds and brass, who in an orchestra can make their solo lines sound clearly heard above 30 or so string players with three people on the string team, can pose some interesting challenges to composers, to say the least. Andrew's solution to these particular challenges was pretty unique. He actually ended up employing a lot of extended techniques, weird ways to play our instruments, and the result was a sound that was so different, we actually had a bunch of rehearsals dedicated to figuring out how to get the trumpet to poke out of the ensemble texture. Here's Y Music flute player Alex Sopp.
I play flute with a bunch of groups, including Y Music and with the Knights. It's, like, super athletic to play his music, and I can't tell you how it really takes every bit of life that you have to give into it. It really takes out of you. And, I mean, for me, especially Music in Circles is, like, the equivalent to going for a really long run or, like, doing something really strenuous. He was always encouraging us to go faster and faster, and I think because he really did want that breathless, ecstatic run to the finish. Like, he never wanted it to sound too in control. It's like all the different sounds and the amount of air that goes into all of these sounds, and then just the way that the phrases kind of, like, tumble on top of themselves over and over again. Like, it can leave you a little lightheaded, but I think that lightheadedness is what makes it beautiful.
So, as you may gather, these techniques, these sounds that Andrew is asking for, some of them are pretty standard at this point. Techniques like sol ponticello, where a string player can draw the bow close to the bridge to produce a wheezy, ghostly sound, or blowing air through the wind instruments to produce the faintest hint of pitch. Others, though, they are straight from the crate, creative Andrew stuff.
A lot of my work is all about very clearly and concisely explaining very complicated physical combinations of motions.
So your scores must look a little bit different than your typical sort of, you know, Bach partita.
Yes, they do. I would love to be able to write a score that looks like a Bach partita. Someday I will. And by that I mean a score that is so crystal clear that in a way lots of notes aren't needed about it. Notes mean like written instructions. You know, I think that's the beauty of Bach is that like he leaves so much open-ended that we can do whatever we want with it. There are so many possible layers. But for me in my work right now, so much of what makes my music goes beyond traditional notation and sort of pushes at the boundaries of what our notation system can do. By the way, I love notation. I love our system. I think it's like the most special thing about being a composer is that we work with this notation system that has come down to us after like 1,000 years of evolution and that we're adding to it constantly. It's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. And, you know, sorry if I'm getting on a little soapbox here, but there's so many kinds of music that don't involve notation that are spectacular and interesting and beautiful, but our little world involves notation, and I think that's so, so, so special that when you, Nadia, play a piece by me, Andrew, like, it's not just me telling you what to do. Like, I write it down, and you make something of it. That's amazing to me. Anyway, okay, back. I'm back.
I love it, though. I think we should always have a notation soapbox moment.
Yo, everyone, yeah. I mean, come on, people. Notation, it's amazing. What was I saying? I was saying something about...
We were talking about how actually you are pushing notation and the things that you're asking
Oh, yeah.
for.
Yeah, like, so our system of notation, as it has come down to us... is very, very good with pitch. Like when you want a certain pitch, you just write it and everyone knows what you mean. It's pretty good with loudness and softness. Actually, not so good. It's really good with rhythm. If you're writing rhythm in a certain kind of way, you can be very, very clear. Where it really falls apart is when we're talking about timbre. Timbre is a fancy word that just means the color of the sound. It's what makes a trumpet sound like a trumpet and a viola sound like a viola.
But other timbral ideas, aside from just force, are really, really not available to us just in terms of the system of notation that you're talking about.
Yeah, no, and the system is just very vague. Like, there's no clear way, and we have this system of words that we use sometimes.
Right, but also in, like, you know, 8 different languages, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's come down to us in this weird combination of different languages and all these terms that mean slightly different things to different people. And gradually, you know, it's kind of like the history of science or whatever, and every once in a while they have a big conference and they decide something. I mean, notation's like that too. Every once in a while something finally makes its way into, like, the standard lexicon. But I still feel like we're kind of all mishmashing around when it comes to timbre and stuff like that and how we really are going to describe these things that instruments do.
I actually have a viola here, weirdly.
Oh! Let's do a demo.
Let's do a demo, right? Great.
Cool. So oftentimes, extended techniques are used to create different and unusual timbres on an instrument. So for instance, I can make your viola sound not like a viola, but like a whispering breeze or something like that. Or
so my normal technique of playing a G would sound something like this.
Yes, okay. Now we can change the timbre if you move towards the bridge. Yeah, we get that sound. And if you play directly on the bridge, yeah, you get this amazing air sound. So that's changing the timbre of that viola through a very specific extended technique. Like the slow motion bow. You want to try some slow motion bow?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, one of the keys is to do light left-hand finger pressure. So pick a note, maybe.
Instead of playing a G sharp like this, I'm going to use a light pressure so it doesn't really
have
a lot of pitch.
It's kind of a little fuzzy sounding. And then I just want you to imagine yourself, you're in a movie that's gone into slow motion and you're really just... Yeah, and you can lighten the pressure. And you can add pressure. You can go closer to the bridge even sometimes and get... Yeah, no, this other thing that I did with that slow motion... If you were to finger a G, but finger it kind of halfway, so it's not fully depressed, and then use some of that slow motion bow, and you can, if you massage the pressure in your bow arm and the pressure in your finger in your left hand, you can get a note that sounds like that G, but has a little dirt in it. Yeah. And you see how it's kind of like coming in and out? Who knows what that sounds like, you by yourself in front of a microphone, but when you get a whole string section doing that... It sounds like... What it sounded like was actually like an old-timey recording where everyone, you know, everything is fuzzy and covered in this layer of sonic dirt.
Right.
And it was really... I thought it was really cool. So either I invent my own symbols for these things, these very specific sort of physical combinations of motions that are going to lead to a very specific timbre. So I could invent a symbol or a brief word description of them, which then, like, it borders on linguistics in a way because it's like inventing a language. And however you define your symbols in your language, it actually defines what you can do with it musically. And so finding a symbol or a label that's going to work with all the different ways I want to use it musically is actually, sometimes that's the primary sort of challenge of my work.
The piece that you wrote for Y Music, Music in Circles, had a stroke that I've actually really never seen demanded, which was this stroke where instead of moving bow back and forth in a bounce, like... You asked for me to move it completely up and down, which makes this really interesting sound. What what I do like about your music is that that seems like such an obvious move now that I've done it.
Yeah.
But before you asked for it, it hadn't occurred to me.
Great. You know, I think that move is purely just me goofing off at home and being like, well, what happens if I don't move it up and down? What if it's just bouncing on the string? And not only just use that sound, but then to see where that sound could go, like what could, how that sound could develop, is that's the interesting thing for me.
Right.
So, and then, you know, how to describe to you and all the other violists of the world, like, how to make that sound, that's the trick.
Definitely hear some resonance between the Why Music piece and Sabina from the Companion Guide to Rome. Are those pieces related in your brain at all?
Oh, very much. Yeah, they're in the same key, in fact, and they both deal with kind of like organic growth and how to take something very, very small and spin it into something that is surprisingly large. That piece also deals with the string instruments in a very similar way, about getting those open strings to ring. I kind of have two different ways of working. And one is like the kind of jump cut, Andrew, I would say, where it's about, you know, smashing disparate ideas right up next to each other, having them interact or like interrupt each other.
Oh, Thomas!
And have this very Tom and Jerry sense of how, you know, or video game-like mm-hmm. sense of how ideas go, which can be really fun. And then there's the other style, which is like, it's often really amazing just to watch one thing unfold. As if, you know, in a movie when they give you a single take and you have to start crying. And that's really amazing. And so both the Why Music piece and Sabina are that kind of one take, let's watch something unfold in real time.
So what are some other techniques that you have been asking for lately?
Well, I mean, there's all sorts of, like, abrasive scratch tone, which I really love. I don't know. Would you mind handing me a viola?
No, go for it.
Your viola? Oh, this is so exciting. These kind of... sounds that are, to me, they sound a little bit like, it's like an electronic sound. It's like, you know, when the needle has been ripped off the thing a little bit. Or this one, I love this.
What I loved about that first electronic sound that you made, just because it what it looks like is kind of interesting. Your left hand darts really quickly up and down the fingerboard while you're producing that sound, and your right hand is also kind of very, very light and fast, and it feels like a cat pouncing on something.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because for me, instrumental music is all about the combination of physical gesture and sonic event. You know, they're related, like. There's a very strong physical gesture, and it makes a very interesting musical sound. And, you know, for me, they're inseparable in a way. And I often think about these gestures in terms of the physical impact they're going to have, the visual impact. Like, what does it look like for a human being to make this sound in this strange way? And, yeah, my last big orchestra piece was, like, how can I manipulate the idea of, you know, 60 people doing that gesture? And it jumps out because it's like 60 people doing this weird physical thing you've never seen an orchestra do, in addition to like making a really odd sound. Ooh, I have one more I'm going to show you. I've also been playing around with the pitchless bounce, so the one. But if you just lighten your fingers, I love that sound. And I wrote this whole, you know that sound? That's me just sliding my fingers on the fingerboard. I don't know if anyone can hear that or not. Sounds a little bit like, you know, on guitar.
Right. That, yeah.
The guitar shifty sound.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote, like, this whole fugue for orchestra, for strings, which was just this sound.
So by fugue, do you mean like sort of old school fugue, imitative writing, where there's one voice and then another voice comes in a little bit later with the same material?
Yeah,
like, interacts with itself.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, And yes, as you say, a fugue is a very old-timey thing, but like you just put a new sound to it and then it's like in a whole new world. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to suggest that my music is a whole new world.
Well, I mean, kind of is.
It was a combination of pitchless thud and shifting sound. It was awesome. I try to be as open as possible and to have a combination of, you know, these like wacky, weird techniques. And I also love traditional playing. Like, there's nothing like the sound of a viola section in thirds. Ugh, kills me. So like, yeah, no, let's do it all.
As always, if you want to hear any more of anything you've heard on today's show, you can visit our website, q2music.org/meetthecomposer. When we come back from the break, Andrew and I will talk about his most ambitious project yet and what video games and Beethoven have in common. Stay tuned.